does anybody want to bear their testimony?
Why don't you start off? So sick
of me. Oh, yeah.
I hate his guts. I don't want to be with you. I'm so sick of you. Well, you know what? You remember what Frank Sinatra said, right?
Of course.
If you can make it there.
No, I remember.
Yeah. I'm so sick of me. I don't want to be with you. All right. So I want to ask our listeners.
Think about it.
What is your appetite on Trump? Shut up, Tom.
All right. You're speaking to the listeners. I'll just.
I just want to know.
On thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Hey, welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and several weeks ago, on July 2nd, we held our first ever live recording with a few of our Patreon supporters. Now, this is something that we're going to be doing on the first Sunday of every month going forward, kind of like our own infant fast and testimony meeting. Now, I'm trying to set it up so that this next one that we do on August 6th will be a live screenplay reading of Behind Closed Doors. But anyway, we had a lot of fun with this last one. It was myself, John Hamer, Tom, Randy, and Heather, and we heard from a few of our listeners as well, who you'll also hear from today. And it really generated some pretty good ideas, some that you're going to hear today, others that you'll hear in the future, and one in particular that you probably already heard in the past. Right, John?
I really liked the one we did where we did the silly
Lowry letters.
The Romancing the Stone, you know, of all the Peepstone ones.
Oh, yeah, we did that one too, right, yeah.
And so I have been trying to think of like what we could do as early Mormon documents where we kind of do one like that, where we're using the old timey voices and being like
JFK.
It's like a documentary. Yeah. Like one of the, you know, like a, whatever, Ken Burns documentary slash, but you can also come in with silly stuff. And so I was thinking we could do the read all the different accounts of the first vision.
Oh, cool.
Didn't we do that?
Right. Oh yeah.
We did do that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, that's a good idea. This
is a good idea. Because John doesn't listen to the podcast.
But you know what? Something that I've always wanted to do on Infants on Thrones and just have never done it yet is read the letter that 36-year-old Joseph Smith wrote to 19-year-old Nancy Rigdon on April 11th, 1842, after Nancy had repeatedly turned down Joseph's overtures to become yet another notch on his celestial bedpost. Now, let me give you here a Bill Real-style trigger warning. Hide your children and shield the elderly's ears, because what I'm about to read comes from one of the most damning anti-Mormon books ever written. It's called The History of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and it was published by the church in Salt Lake City, Utah in 1909. Now, you can find what I'm about to read to you in Volume 5, pages 134 to 136, as an essay entitled Happiness.
Wickedness never was happiness.
What's that, Brother Packer?
Wickedness never was happiness.
Never was what?
Happiness.
Oh, right, because the title of the essay is
Happiness.
What?
Happiness.
Oh, well, now that I understand. So here you go. The words of a 36-year-old prophet to the 19-year-old daughter of his co-founder, Sidney Rigdon, as recorded in the History of the Church, Volume 5. Happiness is the object and design of our existence, and will be the end thereof if we pursue the path that leads to it. And this path is virtue, uprightness, faithfulness, holiness, and keeping all the commandments of God. but we cannot keep all the commandments without first knowing them. And we cannot expect to know all, or more than we know now, unless we comply with or keep those we have already received. That which is wrong under one circumstance may be, and often is, right under another. God said, "Thou shalt not kill." At another time, he said, "Thou shalt utterly destroy." This is the principle on which the government of heaven is conducted, by revelation adapted to the circumstances in which the children of the kingdom are placed. Whatever God requires is right, no matter what it is, although we may not see the reason thereof till long after the events transpire. If we seek first the kingdom of God, all good things will be added. So with Solomon. First, he asked wisdom, and God gave it to him, and with it, every desire in his heart, even things which might be considered abominable to all who understand the order of heaven only in part, but which in reality were right because God gave and sanctioned by special revelation. A parent may whip a child, and justly too, because he stole an apple. Whereas if the child had asked for the apple and the parent had given it, the child would have eaten it with a better appetite. There would have been no stripes. All the pleasure of the apple would have been secured. All the misery of stealing lost. This principle will justly apply to all God's dealings with his children. Everything that God gives us is lawful and right. And it is proper that we should enjoy his gifts and blessings whenever and wherever he is disposed to bestow. But if we should seize upon those same blessings and enjoyments without law, without revelation, without commandment, those blessings and enjoyments would prove cursings and vexations in the end, and we should have to lie down in sorrow and wailings of everlasting regret. But in obedience, there is joy and peace unspotted, unalloyed. And as God has designed our happiness and the happiness of all his creatures, he never will institute an ordinance or give a commandment to his people that is not calculated in its nature to promote that happiness which he has designed and which will not end in the greatest amount of good and glory to those who become the recipients of his law and ordinances. Blessings offered but rejected are no longer blessings, but become like the talent hid in the earth by the wicked and slothful servant. The proffered good returns to the giver. The blessing is bestowed on those who will receive and occupy. For unto him that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundantly. But unto him that hath not, or will not receive, shall be taken away that which he hath, or might have had. Be wise today, 'tis madness to defer. Next day the fatal precedent may plead. Thus on till wisdom is pushed out of time into eternity. Our Heavenly Father is more liberal in his views and boundless in his mercies and blessings than we are ready to believe or receive, and at the same time is more terrible to the workers of iniquity, more awful in the executions of his punishments, and more ready to detect every false way than we are apt to suppose him to be. He will be inquired of by his children. He says, "Ask and ye shall receive, seek and ye shall find." But if you will take that which is not your own, or which I have not given you, you shall be rewarded according to your deeds. But no good thing will I withhold from them who walk uprightly before me and do my will in all things, who will listen to my voice and to the voice of my servant whom I have sent. For I delight in those who seek diligently to know my precepts and abide by the law of my kingdom. For all things shall be made known unto them in mine own due time, and in the end they shall have joy. What do you think, ladies? Convinced?
That's a good idea.
Someone should totally do that.
Okay, well, I'll think of another thing.
No, I have an idea that maybe, this is Jerem from San Antonio. I just spent a week in Utah with my dad, who's a very Mormon patriarch. And I found a really cool way to talk with him about, you know, how it's kind of weird when you try to let your believing family members in on, you know, how you view the world. Yeah. And I found this really cool way to do it, finding parallels with Mormonism and science. And there are several areas where Mormon doctrine actually reinforces things that are evident through science. So we were in a golf cart driving down the fairway, and one of the parallels is, you know, with the righteous mind, Jonathan Haidt talks about how basically a rough draft of who we are is part of us when we arrive, our neurology through our genetics. And then about 40% of us is edited by our culture and our religion and our upbringing and so on. And so I started a conversation with my dad, talking about, you know, Abraham chapter 3, where it talks about the gradation of intelligences, where people that are alive right now really don't have much control over a lot of who they are. And I talked about the parallel, you know, with Abraham and what neuroscience is telling us, that we're genetically sort of predetermined. And that kind of opened things up a little bit with my dad. And we had this beautiful conversation. And another parallel is, you know, the book of Moses, where Moses is shown a vision of all things that have ever been created and so on. And all of a sudden, Moses has this realization where he says, "Now I know that man is nothing, which thing I had never before supposed." And I said, "Dad, you know, I have the same view about, you know, human beings, that we're really nothing in the face of all that exists. It's just that I don't necessarily believe there's something behind it." So I think, you know, we have a lot of episodes and so on in the post-Mormon community about how Mormonism gets things wrong with science, but there are some parallels with what we know from, you know, from science that overlap with Mormonism. And I think that would be kind of fun to talk about the hits.
Joseph Smith talking about how matter cannot be created or destroyed. It just is. It's organized, or the eternal nature of energy. You know, like what is it, that spirit is light and truth or something like that? That, you know, I mean, depending on what all those things mean, energy that animates us, that like animates these meat puppet bodies, there's something. Like, is that a spirit? Like, I totally reject this idea of a spirit because of the way that I grew up being taught that it was. But if you just start talking about some kind of energy that doesn't die with death, I don't know. I think there's something there, but I'm so like squeamish to put to try and understand or try to explain it, you know?
Are you talking about energy healing? Are you into Reiki now?
No.
I'm going off on some. Are you getting in touch with your chi and your chakras? What's going on?
Are there chi and chakras? What are those? I hear that as a thing, but I don't even know. Like, what is a chakra? What's a chakra? Chakra. What are they supposed to be?
Okay, from like two yoga classes, I think that they're like seven, maybe, centers in your body of energy, and those are your chakras. I don't know, but I do know that who just left the church brought her. This is not getting recorded and released, is it, Glenn?
It's getting recorded, yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
You can say anything that you're comfortable saying for something that's being recorded and released.
All right. All right. A friend of mine, hypothetically, brought some lame guy to my house who believed it, who had left Mormonism. and now has replaced all religious mumbo jumbo with like this Reiki energy healing mumbo jumbo that's the exact same thing with a different name. So if that's what you're trying to tell me, then no, I don't believe that you're like playing with energy. Like
no, but not like that. But
lap
like,
so that you can heal yourself with it.
No. But like when you see somebody die, like I've the only time I've ever come even close to this is my grandmother who had a stroke.
Are you a serial killer?
No. No. But okay, there was definitely a difference in her body when it was alive from when it was dead, right? There's like some kind of, boy, John just disappeared. Did you see that on the screen? That was kind of cool.
No.
He just up and left, dude.
Right. But there's a lag. So it was like he was there and then poof, he was, because computer froze. Anyways, it was an optical illusion. But there's some kind of energy that animates our bodies, right? Is that right? No.
That's what people would always. That's what anyway. Ancient philosophers were saying, right? So this is the basis of that kind of thing. They say there's the difference between a person that is. There's only the difference between a corpse and a living person is the animating principle or whatever you want to call it. Right. So like obviously there's a difference between something that's alive and something that's dead, which is simply decomposing whatever.
So like. Neurons firing, like whatever the electric impulse is that makes your heart beat. What is all of this? Your nervous system. What is that?
Chemical reactions.
Chemical reactions of, but it's like electric, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, chemical and electrical.
Yeah,
stuff that's going on in there. It's not. Like we're not like creating gravity fields or something other than, you know, what all mass has, right? That's not affecting it. So it's one of those things.
Okay.
My cell biology teacher in undergrad described it this way. She said, we're just biochemistry with membranes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really like, the original one of these things before we diverged into Reiki.
Well, that was Heather that took us into Reiki. I'm not going to take credit for that.
The idea, though, that this Joseph Smith revision of Moses, right, where this is part of the JST, that vision of Moses that you're talking about, you know, where Moses is realizing essentially that the Copernican worldview places humanity in a different role than the old Ptolemaic Aristotelian worldview. And so now Moses gets to understand that for the first time because it's now 1830 or 1832 or whatever. And Moses, like you said, that which thing Moses had never thought before because Moses had never thought that before 1832. But anyway, so now Moses. But anyway, it does, and it's an example of how I think, like you're saying, they were still trying very hard in Joseph Smith's time to get their hands around. You know, they're in this Enlightenment time period. They are still hoping that they can thread that needle between an increasing literalism and biblical worldview where they're interpreting the Bible very literally and all that kind of thing. But then they're hoping that they can make that, you know, jive with the emerging empiricist scientific worldview of the Enlightenment too. And so, and Joseph Smith, one of the things that he was doing was he was willing to take a Sharpie to the Bible, you know, in order to try to make it work, right? And so anytime that the Bible says something that, you know, didn't make any sense according to that, he's like, takes out the Sharpie and he just X's it all out and he writes something, oh, it really meant to say this, right? And so anyway, so that was kind of how he was still trying to do it. But obviously that's it's a dead end path intellectually. So in other words, you can't actually jive an ancient text like that with what we now understand in terms of emerging, you know, ideas that we've created. They didn't have access to those ideas back then. But it's an interesting topic to talk about.
Yeah. You know, the thing that was really cool was, you know, what it did was it opened a door where I could actually share my views with my dad because I was acknowledging his viewpoint.
Yeah.
And he's a patriarch, and he gives, you know, 10 or 12 patriarchal blessings every month. So I have a gay brother, and my mom and dad have, you know, they're completely accepting of him and his partner, and they come home for holidays and everything, but there's still a little bit of weirdness there. And so talking about Abraham and the preexistence and genetics and how science has determined, you know, a lot of our personality is intact when we're born, I was able to share a TED talk with my dad that I would have never been able to share with him. And it basically was kind of on the genetic basis of homosexuality and so on. And then at the end of that TED talk, I said, you know, Dad, odds are that maybe once a month you're giving a patriarchal blessing to someone who's gay, and they may not even be clear on it themselves. But if you promise them that they're going to get married and have kids, then you could be really messing with them. And so, you know, you got to be careful. I didn't say you should be careful, but that was implied. And he, it was just this dead silence. And he just looked at me, and I could tell that, you know, that had kind of gotten through. And I think that, you know, this strategy of trying to acknowledge to our relatives and friends and family the things that, that Mormonism gets right can also be a way of opening up dialogue with them about, you know, about what we believe and so on.
Yeah, and quoting the scriptures, which is what you're doing, because even if they don't mean that much to us now, when you can use the scriptures as the foundation for some kind of claim that you're making, even if it's a counter Mormon doctrine, that's really powerful for people who still believe the scriptures. So that was smart.
Yeah.
Jeremy, is your dad, as a state patriarch, is he the kind of person that would listen to what you said, that there's a chance that somebody you're giving a blessing to is gay, and that he would think, no, because if that were the case, I would know through inspiration?
Yeah, I think that would be possible, that, you know, he really feels that he's channeling, you know, divinity when he's giving his blessings. He describes sort of feeling like he's going into a wormhole or something. You know, he fasts the night before and really takes this seriously and is very, you know, genuine with what he does. But, you know, he's also gotten some things wrong. I mean, I had a really close friend of mine who had throat cancer. He was aged about 32 and ended up dying. But my dad had, you know, not in a blessing, but my dad had told him, oh, you're going to get better. They're going to fix you. And my friend said to me, you know, your dad told me I'm going to get better, so I know I'm going to. And then he died. So there's, you know, my dad has dissonance just like the rest of us. And, you know, I've talked with him about Joseph Smith and so on. And he said to me, well, you know, if Joseph Smith, did those things, then he's really going to have to pay for that. And, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, he knows that things aren't perfect, and I'm just hoping that maybe he'll temper some of his remarks and not be so stark in his descriptions of, you know, what's going to happen in people's lives.
So it just gets vaguer and vaguer because you can't say anything now in a patriarchal blessing.
You know, like
us will talk about it.
One of the Mormon apostles came to Kirtland Temple and told the then director of Kirtland Temple, who was a young woman who has, you know, there's no way that, you know, because of, you know, anyway, her different health conditions, she just no way that she'll ever be able to have children. It's something that she and her husband struggled with for again and again and again. And so, you know, so the Mormon apostle just said to her, you know, that he was assured that she and her husband would be able to have, you know, like have a child, you know, in this very condescending prophetic way and voice, and where he prophesied to that to her. And it was just, you know, she was just so seething mad at him, you know, for, you know, having that kind of, I don't know if it was Hinckley or Monson, or, but it was somebody pretty big who did that anyway. So it's just like this thing that people do. So I'm not even talking about your dad. I'm just thinking about the apostles.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder, you know, how effective are we really, even if we're talking to them in scripture speak or, you know, channeling things from the church, does it just kind of like bounce off of them like water off of a duck's back because they feel like, well, I've got the inspiration of God and they don't. And so I don't have to listen to them.
Doesn't
yeah.
It?
Right. Yeah. Depends where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. How you doing, Randy? Oh, sorry, Jerem. I cut you off.
Oh, you're good. No, I just think I think that just like all of us got to where we are by degrees, I think that, you know, little nudges here and there certainly will change things. I don't think my dad's ever going to, you know, renounce his faith and give up his, what would you call it, his patriarchy and and that sort of thing. But I
so Matt wouldn't be able to sway him to just leave the church right now. even if he yelled at him really, really loud, he wouldn't be able to convince him.
Very, like, you know, forward.
Yeah. But you know, I've seen our family go over the last 10 years where, you know, my dad and mom wouldn't. It was harder for them, and now my brother and his partner come home from New York City every year, and we have a wonderful Christmas together. And his partner's just like one of the family, and my dad, you know, is the stake patriarch. So, you know, it's definitely some changes have occurred there.
That's good.
That's awesome.
What part of New York does your brother live?
He lives about a block north of Central Park. He's an orthodontist.
What a douche.
Yeah, right? That's like a tooth chiropractor.
God. Your brother's an orthodontist in Manhattan, north, like a mile north of Central Park.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I hate his guts.
From jealousy?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And everybody, welcome Randy.
Well, you know what? You remember what Frank Sinatra said, right?
Of course.
If you can make it there.
No, I remember.
Don't even let it. Yeah, we got
it. No, you don't need it. You don't need to say it. I remember. So,
no,
Randy, I talked about you a little bit before you got on. I mentioned how you weren't that happy with the way that you were talked about on the Bill Real episode about swearing. And just wondering if you wanted to set the record straight.
What? You fucking bastards.
Let's get that dirty laundry out there, man.
There it is.
But here's the thing, man. I mean, you guys are like, when Randy cusses, it's Tuesday. It's like, come on, dude. I got a little bit more of an artistic sense of my profanity.
Randy considers himself a cussing artist.
It's my true medium. Others work in clay. I work in profanity. The guy was explaining cursing exactly the way I like to employ it. Like, you know, be judicious. If you use it too much, it loses its efficacy. And sometimes the only, like, word that conveys the emotion you're feeling is a good fuck. And you guys were like, oh, Randy just cusses all the time. And that, I just found that very offensive.
So dismissive.
Yes.
And
totally unfair. Like, totally, totally unfair, totally ungrounded. You know,
it's like, if you guys only knew how many times I think the word fuck and don't say it, then you'd realize how much, like, restraint and artistry I'm using.
This isn't the proper time for that word. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yes. I use restraint all the time. Have all of you seen Rick and Morty? I've got Hamer on board.
No, I haven't seen any of it.
It was really
good.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it South Park good, though?
It's way smarter than South Park.
Oh, wow.
Way deeper. Way more fucked up.
Yeah.
Did you think about it before you said that? Was that an appropriate use of the F word?
See?
No.
I don't know if that was judicious.
Yeah.
I think it was a throwaway.
Yeah. Sounds like Sunday to me.
How else? Oh, should I say it's way more screwed up without it? I mean, when you're burying your own corpse from a your alternate from a multiverse, you're burying your own corpse. Should I say that's screwed up?
I don't know. You're the artist. You're the artist.
Yeah, that's why I use fucked up. It's fucked up.
Okay.
And fuck you.
There it is.
Okay. So unless you guys have already done an episode on this, I thought of another early Mormon documents, one that we should read.
Yeah, we did that one too.
All right.
No, I don't think we have. So, can you see this? So early, all the patriarchal blessings. So this all the patriarchal blessings that Joseph Smith Jr., Joseph Smith Sr., Hiram, and William Smith gave. And they're crazy.
That definitely sounds like a good idea.
That's a great idea.
This will be good. We'll have a good one. I mean, we'll find some good stuff. Joseph Sr. is like this crazy. I mean, he really believes in like really fantasy and magic stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then so he is all over the place.
He's big on the occult, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's all of those, and they're pretty amazing. And then also Williams are pretty out there too. So,
well, William was also kind of whack kind of job.
Yeah. So yeah, Hiram is kind of boring, but anyway.
But I tell you what, reading the Brigham Young biography, Hiram could not have been more excited to be let into the in group of marrying teenagers.
Yeah, it's sad.
He was so pissed that he wasn't let into the group.
Yeah.
And that Brigham was. Yeah. And then he was so excited to finally, like, Joseph trusted him to be in the group.
Yeah.
We still haven't done that podcast on that Brigham Young biography.
I have to read the biography, and I just hate Brigham Young so much. I just cannot read that biography. I mean, every page of it, I just like take that book and I just throw it on the ground. step. I don't like it.
Well, you don't like Brigham, but I don't think you like the author's take too, right?
Right. So unfortunately, I thought it was probably going to be good because it's a non-Mormon scholar who wrote it, but non-Mormons get wooed, you know, and so they don't understand all the little traps that all of these, church.
What word did you use?
Wooed.
They fall in love with Joseph and Brigham.
They believe all of these people in this church office building. All of these historians who are just giving them the whole Pied Piper treatment and leading them along, and so they believe all of this crap, you know. And so and it's like, so for example, I've had this happen before where. Like I went to a conference on the Missouri Mormon War and a Missourian who is a historian who like looked it all up and all this kind of thing. And I thought, okay, well, this is a nice outside perspective and this kind of thing. And they just bought into the Mormon apologetic rhetoric on the Mormon Missouri War, which is just bullshit, you know? And so you have to actually have perspective in it in order to be able to understand that, this is like contrived narrative where they're covering over all the things that, you know, our ancestors did wrong. And in fact, the Missourians should not be kowtowing at all. I mean, it's a legitimate two sides thing, you know, where the one side is being quite awful and the other side also was awful, you know, but it's not like a thing where you're going to just sit around and apologize to the Mormons on this thing. Cause it's not like that. And the same thing here with this Brigham Young bullshit narrative that the LDS church historians were able to sell to this poor guy from Massachusetts who doesn't know shit. So anyway, okay. It's annoying. So the book annoys me. I don't want to hear about it.
Is there any way we could turn that book of patriarchal blessings into a musical? Because I think we're due.
It's really funny. I like the book of patriarchal blessings. These are good.
Yeah. At least some voices, at least some accents.
Yeah. There's all kinds of, we could do the old-timey accents again, you know, like.
Yeah, I got the old prospector down.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I got? You see this or not?
I see the fate of the persecutors of the prophet Joseph Smith.
Randy, you dumbass.
Yeah, the fate of the persecutors of the prophet Joseph Smith, the musical.
The musical, yeah.
Wow. This is an amazing book, you know, of bullshit. You know, this is like the most pop, you know, like other than Mormon doctrine, like this is like the most popular bookcraft book from 1952. And it's like all of the bullshit ways that like everybody who was ever mean to Joseph Smith, like they, like the somebody was mean
met to an Joseph, untimely demise.
Yeah,
like yes, they, awesome.
They refused to give him a shoe shine, and so then they got skin cancer. <That's
awesome. laughs> Oh, that is great.
It's all a total lie, you know. So it's like, is that like has John C. Bennett just like having, you know, like get skin cancer and worms are eating him and things like that. The guy, like, you know, lived a rich life, and he was very.
Oh, what? That's not what I learned in Work in the Glory.
Yeah, because they got, guess where they got the data.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, I got a good book here.
All right. Well, we've been fast and testimony meeting for about an hour. Is there any final? Does the spirit move anybody to give a final testimony?
You're supposed to let the silence bring him.
I know. We've got to tweak this format, I think, a bit.
I'll read you the part of the patriarchal blessing of Solomon Angel by Joseph Smith Sr.
Okay, I'll listen.
Okay. Thou shalt be mighty as the three Nephites. Thou shalt visit planets besides this, and thou shalt hold the keys that have been bestowed upon thee while the world is man. And I confer on thee the blessing upon thee that the good, for the benefit of the posterity will of the world shall stand, that they may claim among their inheritance the brethren of thy father. Where's the rest of the thing about the translation?
How pervasive was this idea about planets? Because you've got quotes from both Brigham Young and Joseph Smith about people on the moon or people on the sun.
It's like, if thou shalt wish it, thou can translate thyself from planet to planet.
Oh, dude.
Wow. Yeah. There's nothing weird about our religion.
Was that a pretty pervasive belief in early Mormonism that we just don't have a lot of survivals of?
You don't, that doesn't survive.
You look like Denethor right now.
That didn't come.
Take your glasses off. Take your glasses off.
Give him some cherry tomatoes.
Next month, I am eating tomatoes the entire time.
Yes.
But don't pop them in your mouth and eat them like a just normal human. Bite halfway through them so they drool down your chin.
That's what's happening next month. I'll tell you that. While I'm reading that thou shalt translate thyself from planet to planet, if thou shalt wish.
So. All right. So I want to ask our listeners.
Think about it. Is that you getting ready to swear, Randy?
Oh, it's wondering, hard not
is
to.
Is this the right?
What is your appetite, listeners? Because I'm going to Sunstone. I'm giving a 60-minute presentation on Trump. But like, where do you guys stand on Trump, and what's your appetite for? Shut up, Tom. Just shut the fuck up for a minute, okay?
All right. You're speaking to the listeners. I'll just
I just want to know. Anyone?
Yeah. I'm it's kind of hard for me. I can't say too much because I'm
in the Air Force.
Air Force officer.
Yeah.
You can't. Against the commander in chief,
I think what Randy wants to know is, would you be interested in hearing Randy talk about it, or are you like Tom, where you're just like, I don't want to hear Trump come from the infant's lips ever again? Is that what you're asking, Randy?
That, but now that I know he's part of the system, I'm wondering. He's part of his ultimate boss is Trump.
Ask David the same question, Randy, because he was gone when you asked, but he's back now.
Unless David. That was the reason why he left.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
No, he left before. I saw him leave before Tom. That's my side. It's more exasperated than yours.
Right.
So, David, what is your appetite for, hypothetically, you're at Sunstone in Salt Lake, and it's my birthday.
And I'm giving a presentation.
And I'm giving a presentation.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically, what's your appetite for that? Be honest, and I don't care if you like I'm not going to be sensitive about
he
it.
Prefers to tell and you.
Just forget that it's his birthday and that you're going to hurt his feelings if you say that you don't like it. Just be honest.
As long as there were plenty of fucks, I think it'd be great.
But I gotta be artistic about it, man.
I don't think you can drop any fucks at Sunstone.
No,
oh, I will. Oh,
oh you can.
I'm gonna push to see if they will like disinvite me. There's gonna be some fucks.
What's the topic? Do we know the topic yet?
Yeah, the topic is why did 61% of Mormons vote for Trump when he is represents everything against what they believe in and what they all their sensibilities really.
You know, I thought there were going to be a lot more Mormons that were either going to not vote or vote for like Evan McMullen.
A lot did in Utah.
But I was really surprised at how many actually voted for Trump. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's the people I associate with, but I didn't feel that he had that much support here. So I was really surprised.
All right, so you didn't answer my question. My question is,
Are you coming?
Would you be interested in hearing me eviscerate Trump and Republicans and Mormons?
Absolutely.
You will be wearing a blue shirt, right, Randy?
Well, his research showed that fake news was relevant. It was consumed the most in areas of the country that voted the most. And it was on both sides. But guess what, Tom? 6 times more on the right than on the left.
Oh, is that right?
No.
Wow. How come nobody's writing this shit down? Nobody is.
There was an amazing
tattooed
amount.
Tattooed on the inside of my brain, Tom.
60 minutes chose to edit that part out.
There was an amazing amount consumed on the left during the primaries.
Is this recorded?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess that's why everybody's being careful except for me.
Wait, why is that different again? Any other recording?
Oh, poor Randy.
it's always blows me away where Randy after the fact is like, wait, is this shit being recorded?
That's how I become my most authentic self, is I imagine it's not being recorded.
He's so delicate and artistic in his delivery of profane. But when it comes to anything else, he's like, wait, did I just say something that...
Yeah, fuck you, Tom. And also, I love you.
Yeah.
I always will.
Forever and ever, man.
Are we done?
I'm so sick of you, so sick of me. I don't want to be with you. I'm so sick of you, so sick of me. I don't want to be with you.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
All right, Tom, here's your 6 questions.